we are page Shinitsadi, the right hand column, the middle of the column. We were talking about Malacha Shinitsricha Lagufa. Yeah, and if you could just hit the floor. Thanks. Thank you. We're talking about Malacha Shinitsricha Lagufa on Shabbos, on behalf of a chola, a patient who we have defined as being ein bo sakana, which is, as we've already seen, not the mildest of levels, right? We had the patient who had the ache, we had the patient whose whole body was afflicted. This chola she'ein bo sakana is someone who is in such pain, his whole body is in pain, bedridden, that sort of thing. We gave examples of it, the migraine headache, we gave an example of the high fever, such that one wouldn't leave the house. That's what we're talking about. And we said last time that malacha she'ein etzricha legufa is treated as harsher than other types of malacha that are forbidden derabanan, because it's really a deoraisa, just not with full punishment, because it's not being done in the normal way. So I'm picking up in the middle of that right-hand column, v'ayin b'beir halacha. See the beir halacha. The beir halacha is credited mostly to the Mishnah Berurah himself, although some of it apparently was written by his son-in-law. So the beir halacha that he's quoting here is talking about washing a child on Yom Tov with a cloth underneath the child. That's the case that he's dealing with. And there's a fear that washing the cloth is washing, that laundering is kibbutz, which is prohibited. But on the other hand, it's malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. That's not the way that you wash a cloth. You want to wash something to make it clean. So that's where the beir halacha is coming from. And he says, v'ayin b'beir halacha simen shin beis if you dibra maschil delo. I'm sorry?
Where's? Oh, right here.
Okay. Yeah. Shekosef sham b'pshitus. He writes there in a straightforward way, meaning he doesn't think that it's at all controversial. D'yesh lahatir lasas malacha shein etzricha legufa avor tinok shiyesh lo din shalchola shein bo sakana. He takes it as a given that you're allowed to do malacha shein etzricha legufa on behalf of a child. The child is automatically considered like a chola she'ein bo sakana, and therefore you can do malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. And he doesn't blink an eye. V'gam sham lo kosev shetzarach b'shinui. He doesn't mention anything about doing it in an unusual way. V'tzarach iyun. This requires examination. Why should it be so? Why are we being so lenient with malacha she'ein etzricha legufa? V'kasev li agon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. He quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach to say, Barur hadavar, it's clear, she'im mechavein mamash lechavos dafka asr, kemavur begemara b'shulchan aruch. He says, you have to distinguish between types of cases. The paradigm we gave last week from Malacha she'ein etzricha legufa was the case of extinguishing a flame, where you don't want to use the materials to light the materials again. You're not doing it for the sake of making the material more lightable the next time. That was our paradigm from Malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. So he says, you intend there to extinguish, right? So that's a serious type of malacha, even though it's not for the purpose for which it was done in the Mishkan. That's one type. Ulam, however, v'kibus hamitpachos, where you're washing the cloth that's underneath the kid, but you're not trying to wash the cloth at all. It's just there as a cushion for the child. She'ein ze v'chavana, there it's not your intent at all. Rak ha'yidei psik resha. All it is something that is a guaranteed result of your actions. Psik resha, remember, is shorthand. Psik resha is talking about the case of somebody who cuts off the head of a bird, not in order for the bird to die, but because he wants the head, you know, for a child to play with or something. So so there we say that's a guaranteed result that the bird's going to die, but it's not what you wanted. So that is what's going on in the case of washing the cloth. You're not trying to wash the cloth at all. It just happens to be when you get water on the kid, the water's going to get on the cloth. So that's a lower form of malacha. Shabir matir ha-Mishnah Berurah b'Nikiyim, and therefore the Mishnah Berurah will certainly permit it and correctly permit it where the cloth is already clean, because then that shows that you're not doing it to launder the cloth. The cloth is, if anything, is going to get dirtier now, And the prima godim will be lenient even if the cloth is dirty in a case of need. You need to wash the kid and so on. So the point is, again, to recap, Akam Lashono, end of the quote from Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman says, you can't play the categories game. That's his point. It's very tempting when you're dealing with a shaila, when you have a particular case in front of you, to try to define what you do and don't do based on simple categories. This is a cholesha in bosakana, therefore I can do this, therefore this requires a shinoi, whatever it is. And what he's telling you now is that it's not as easy as that. Because in the case of malach hashen etzvicha legufa, now there are two different types of malach hashen etzvicha legufa. There's malach hashen etzvicha legufa where you are doing the malacha for the sake of the malacha. Or not, you know, with that in mind, that's your goal, like putting out the candle. And then there's malach hashen etzvicha legufa, where it's a byproduct of your actions and it wasn't even what you wanted to do at all. And in the former, where you are trying to do this malacha, we're going to be more strict, even for a chol hashen bo sakana. Whereas the latter, where it's not even your intent at all, it's just a psigreshe, it's just a result of your deeds, a guaranteed result, but still just a result, a byproduct of your deeds, then we're going to be more meka, we'll be more lenient. You follow? So malach hashen tzricha legufa has to be divided up into two different areas. He then continues, we're five lines up from the bottom, right-hand column. Ubiktos hashulchan kosi. He quotes the Sefer Ktos hashulchan, written by, I think I mentioned one other week, the Grach Noah, Rav Chaim Noah, Rav Avram Chaim Noah, about 100 years ago. So the Ktos hashulchan kosi. V'aser lechabos ner b'shvil chol she'ein bo sakana sheyuchal lishon. He says you're not allowed to extinguish a lamp on behalf of a patient who is not dangerously ill to allow him to sleep. Kimufurish b'gemara Shabbos, like b'gemara Shabbos says, afilu lahamatirim shavus l'chol hashein bo sakana, even within the view that permits you to violate a derabanan for a chol hashein bo sakana, asur l'chabos, you won't be allowed to put it out. Dekivoy havi malacha she'en etzvicha l'kufa v'chamira mishar shavusim, because this is stricter than other derabanans. This is really the point that he could have opened the section with, and that would have clarified what we were talking about with malacha she'en etzvicha l'kufa. Malacha she'en etzvicha l'kufa is stricter than other derabanans. Ad kan l'shono, end of quote. Ulam, however, b'da'as Torah kosev, in the Sefer Da'as Torah, which is a good name for a Sefer, the author writes, Ayin shut gur ari Yehuda, see the tshuvas gur ari Yehuda, chelek orachayim, simen kuv zayin, shepasak tegam litzorech chol hashein bo sakana muter lechavos hener al yidei shinoi. He says, for this patient who is not dangerously ill, you are allowed to extinguish the flame, just do it in an unusual way, came into habirak yisir derabanan, since it's only a derabanan. Vishakein pasak besefer shulchan atzei shitim, and so wrote the shulchan atzei shitim, which I've never seen. V'u chokech tzas bazeh, although he's unsure, ad kan lashono, end of quote. So you're seeing different views. One thing that I'm hoping to do at some point in the coming week, and very much bli neder, but is to sit down and make a table of the different views on what one does for the different types of chola, and email that around to help, you know, clarify what we've seen, because we've seen different views and it can get a little confusing. But right now we don't have that. He continues with one more point. He says, "Ah, however, re'ela el simen reishayin chesiv katan dalid dibur hamaschel chola she'in bo sakana v'dibur hamaschel v'samachti me'od." He says, "See my paragraphs earlier on that he had a while back, where I wrote b'shem agon or shlomo zalman orbach zatzal shekol ze kishemeduber bechivoy or shel shava o shemen o kayotze bozeh." He says you have to remember something very important here. When you're dealing with this question as a matter of practice, you're usually, I'd say 98% of the time, not dealing with wax candles or oil lamps. Right? The light you're putting out is an incandescent bulb, fluorescent bulb, but something electric, right? So he says, this whole discussion is talking about extinguishing or shel shava, a wax candle, o shemen, or oil, kayotze bazar, along these lines. Shebekibuyo o sepecham, such that when you put it out, you do make charcoal, something that's improved for future lighting. Ach bekibuy or shel chashmal, but when you put out an electric light, ein bahela eser derabanan. It's only ever going to be a derabanan. Now, you could argue this point, but I'm just going to finish the sentence first. If you do it in an unusual way, and he gives you examples in parentheses, dahainu, begav hayad, the back of the hand, or begav haetzba, the back of one's finger, ein kan ela tre derabanan. Now there are only two derabanans. Because it's derabanan in the first place, and you're doing it in an unusual way. Shemutr letzarchei chola shein bo sakana. And therefore, it will be permitted for a patient who is not dangerously ill, but filo al yidei Yisrael, even if you're going to have a Jew be the one to do the action. So he says, when it comes to turning off a light, it's a lot easier.
So are you allowed to do that?
So he is saying, yes, for the chola shein bo sakana, who's being disturbed by having the light on.
So if he wants to sleep, for example, you could turn off the light.
Not for example, that's our case. That would be our case, yeah. So you'd be allowed to with a shinoi, assuming you had someone who really fit chol hashein bo sakana, not just the person who has an ache, but the person who is bedridden is what we're talking about.
But not with the wax candle.
But not with a wax candle, because now that's an upgraded malacha in its core form. Here, at worst, it's a derabanan, he says. The reason I hesitate on identifying it as a derabanan is because of the point that the Chazon Ish will make, The Chazon Ish makes the statement that a circuit, closing a circuit, is bonet. You are now building, constructing, you're making something useful. Well, if so, then opening the circuit is soser. You are now demolishing. And I believe, if I remember correctly, he will say that it doesn't need to be a constructive act of demolition in order to be a deoraisa, because soser, by definition, is destructive. So taking that view, this will still be a deoraisa. If you take the Chazon Ish's view, this may still be a deoraisa, but he doesn't. I mean, that Rishon LeZalman in general, I believe, does not take the view of the Chazon Ish on electricity.
Friday night, there's that little piece where it says they talk about if you don't do this and you don't do that. And one of the things they say is about extinguishing a light, and I think they're referring to a candle.
Yes.
Because they say if you do it for the charcoal, if you do it for this, if you do
you got
that,
it.
But if you do it for somebody who's sick, it's okay.
Right.
So doesn't that go against what we're saying here? Because
you're going to pass me the sitter, please. Thanks. No. It's right there. It's true. It's true, but you have to read carefully. Thank you. Thanks. Now, what it says is someone who puts out a lamp because he's afraid of non-Jews, because he's afraid of bandits, or for the sake of a chol hashayishan, hatur. Okay? Hatur is a very important word, because even the terms that we use for permission and prohibition have nuance to them. On the one end of the spectrum, you have the word chayav. Chayav doesn't just mean that this is prohibited, it means you are obligated in something. You have to bring a carbon, a person can get lashes, whatever penalty they're going to get. That's when something is prohibited mideoraisa on a biblical level. The opposite end of the spectrum, the opposite of chayav, is mutar, meaning it's entirely permitted, go ahead and do it. But in between, you have the category called patur aval asur, which means you're exempt from liability, because maybe it's a derabanan, but it's asur, you're not allowed to do it. And when you see the word patur, the default assumption, and it's true in almost all cases, is patur means you're not allowed to do this, but if you did it, you're not liable. And the reason why it's patur here is because you're not doing it for the sake of getting charcoal, you're doing it for the sake of letting somebody sleep. So that's the idea. It's prohibited rabbinically. That's what he's telling you. Okay. So that concludes this piece of the discussion, talking about the chol hashein bo sakana, right, who's at this tier, but there's somebody else at this tier of halacha. Not just the patient who is bedridden, but also the patient who might lose a limb. What's called sakanas eiver, danger to a limb of the body, and we have to obviously define that better, but that's what we're going to do. Move up the Shulchan Aruch. It's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. Dim yesh bo sakanas eiver, that if there is danger to a patient's limb, mutter lasos avuro isurei Torah al yedei nochri. You are allowed to violate biblical law for him via a non-Jew. In other words, ask a non-Jew to do something, even though what he's going to do is biblically prohibited, i.e. write a prescription. Right? That would be an example. V'gam mutter li Yehudi lasos avrachola isurei derabanan below shinui. Or a Jew could do for this patient something which is prohibited rabbinically, and he would not need a shinui. He could just do it straight. Okay, so for example, I could give them money to give me medicine. Okay, that would be a case. V'deya zu ikar, and he says that is the main view, that's the view that we accept as halacha. Shehidas rova poskim, because it's the view of the majority of authorities. In footnote 42, he notes the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Taz, the Magen Avraham, the Vilna Gaon. That's the view that they take. So these are things I could do for someone who's in danger of losing an organ, a limb. Ve'en liyehudi la'avor al isurei Torah. An important note. He says a Jew should not violate biblical prohibitions in this case, as long as there's no concern for loss of a life potentially developing. In other words, anytime you're concerned that this might lead to danger to life, you don't hesitate and say, well, should a Jew do it, should a non-Jew do it? No, you just do. But if there's no danger to life, if there's no danger to life, then take the option of the non-Jew doing it. Yeah. We're going to. Yeah. So that's the statement he makes. Better to work with through a non-Jew than through a Jew, even though you have permission to do certain things. Now, as I said, when we started this, we still have to define what sakanas aver is. So what he's going to do here is sort of explain it in a backhand way, and watch what he does. Lu'umatzot. As opposed to this, as opposed to the case of sakanas aver, b'sakanas ayin, where there's danger to an eye, and when he says danger to an eye, he does not mean danger to vision. He means danger to an eye. He's going to get to danger to vision. He means danger to an eye specifically.
Doesn't danger to an eye automatically mean danger to vision?
Yeah, but not the other way around. Danger to vision doesn't mean vision. Correct. So what he says is, as far as danger to an eye, even if it's only a risk to one eye, and he says in parentheses, there you go, hakavana leguf ha'ayin, and it means the physical eye. Mechalin es haShabbos, you violate Shabbos, afilu beisurei Torah, even violating a deoraisa. Why? Dehu kechola sheyesh bo sakana, he is considered dangerously ill.
Then again, you have to violate, then if you do,
is there a
right that has to be with
the Shina? No. No, this is considered pikuach nefesh. This is considered life-saving.
But it doesn't say that. It says, she is.
Correct. So it is. It's someone who's dangerously ill. Now, the idea behind this is seen in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. It's has nothing to do with vision. It has to do with a statement in the Gemara that some part of the eye is connected to the heart. Shiraini or Shiraika de'ena beliba talia. So I had read that for years and not understood. But I give the Gemara Avodah Zarah share on Shabbos between Mincha and Maariv, and we came up to this Gemara, and I decided I was going to do some research. And I found this most fascinating thing, which doctors here are probably very familiar with, the nerve. It's not only the vagus nerve, but it's part of a system that includes it, that apparently runs from the eye, and not the eye specifically, but that region, down to the heart. And so much so that when the palpating or somehow handling nerves in the region of the eye will affect one's heart rate. The doctors are looking at me funny right now, but I can send you links to all sorts of articles about this, not just Wikipedia either. I did the research on this. It's remarkable, is it?
It's a Google
massage.
Right. Exactly. So that's the suggestion that I have to explain what they are describing, that they're concerned that damage to the physical plant that is the eye is somehow going to connect to damage to the heart. Now, whether that's actually going to translate that way when something happens to one's eye is not even the point. The point is that that's the connection that they're making, and therefore they're saying damage to the physical eye is dangerous enough, we consider it automatically life-threatening. That's the statement. If I remember, I'll send out sources on it, because it was a lot of fun to do the research on that. So that's what he says as far as the body of the eye. Then he says, "Va'ayin b'hagas chachmas shlomo ala shulchan aruch." On the page of a standard modern printed shulchan aruch, you'll find notes called chachmas shlomo. See those. Shemekil kan on this discussion. Shemekil gam b'sakanas ibud re'ia b'shtei ha'enayim. He is lenient. Also, regarding, we're now on the page that says Shin Tzadi Aleph. Anybody need one? So he's lenient regarding potential loss of vision in both eyes. Not just in one eye, in both eyes. It has to be in both eyes. For reasons I'll explain in a moment. Even though it doesn't involve danger to the entire body. He says, however, you have to see the discussion he's going to have later on in this section of Shulchan Aruch, that the view of poskim in our day is that a Jew would not be allowed to say, well, someone's going to lose his vision, therefore I'm going to break Shabbos for him. You have to know that there actually is some threat to life that could develop. It isn't sufficient to say, well, the person could lose his vision. That's his statement. Now, what are these views about? Where does all this come from? So the view that the Chachma Shlomo presents is based on two points. Number one, he says, there is a view in the Gemara, which granted we do not tend to paskin like, but there is a view that paskins, that a blind person is exempt from mitzvos. So since we say regarding breaking Shabbos to save a life, Chalel Shabbos achas k'dei sheyishmor shabbosos harveh, break Shabbos once in order they can keep many Shabbatot in the future. Well, here, you are going to preserve his ability to actually fulfill the mitzvos of Shabbos as someone who is instructed in these mitzvos. That's one argument, which is fascinating because we don't paskin that a blind person is exempt from mitzvos. No one is, in my mind, is ever going to say that blind people don't have to make kiddush on Shabbos. Nonetheless, that's what he says. Number two, he says, loss of sight will keep him from learning Torah, will keep him from Kriyas HaTorah, and learning, we say, is even greater than doing. Learning enables doing, and therefore, you can't have a situation in which someone is going to go blind and be unable to learn. That's why they emphasize two eyes, because it's total blindness. That's the position. It's a remarkable stance. I saw also a separate note for I used it in the shiur the other night on treating depression. Rav Unterman, the second, I think he was the second chief rabbi of the State of Israel, argued a completely separate point regarding loss of vision, that if someone loses vision, they are in a dangerous position now, because they're going to travel outside. They can fall and get hurt. It isn't as though they lose their vision and then they go on their merry way. So he argued that because of that, loss of vision is a sakana situation. I'm not clear on why the Nishmas Avram doesn't quote that here, because I would think that would be relevant. But his conclusion, the Nishmas Avram's conclusion, is that if this isn't going to lead to danger to the body, he's not willing to consider this grounds for having a Jew violate a Deoraisa.
So the conclusion is you cannot, even if a person is blind, you cannot violate a
Deoraisa. A Jew would not violate a Deoraisa. Whether you get a non-Jew, Derabanan, Shinui, whatever.
Right.
But that's what he's saying. That's correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still have to see more on this. We're not done with our discussion about how you treat a Sakana Zaver situation and so on. Yes.
But what if you've got a doctor who's working in the emergency department? How do they cope with all of these? And you can't get out of it because maybe you're in Israel and they're all Jews there.
So, right, you can't. You can't.
Not, but I'm just saying. Let's say.
No, but I understood. Understood.
You know, so how do you observe the laws, but also not lose your license for malpractice? Because if there is something you could do, you can't pass it on to a non-Jew because either there isn't a non-Jew or there isn't a non-Jewish doctor. How do you?
Right. So I have seen the view. And I'm going to be very careful now. I learned my lesson, at least for now, until I forget my lesson again. But, Lazy, you'll appreciate this. The newest volume of the RJJ Journal came out, Journal of Halacha Contemporary Society. And I opened it up on whatever it was, let's say Shabbos, Sunday, and saw the first article is on writing on Shabbos, an issue we have discussed here many times. This question of what can you do in terms of writing and dictating and electronically and typing it and whatever. And I said, great, I can't wait to see this article because I deal with this all the time and I don't know how to answer this question. So I start flipping through it, and lo and behold, I come across my name. He's quoting me from one of our shiurim. It's recorded and it's on YU Torah. And it says something along the lines of Rabbi Mordechai Turchiner claims that perhaps, I think it was recording it digitally where you just start once and stop once is not as bad as typing, because then you're not violating. It's only once in the beginning and once at the end. Something like that. So number one, it's an absurd sentence. Rabbi Mordechai Turchiner claims that perhaps. Either you claim it or you say perhaps. You can't claim that perhaps. Number two, I never ever intended that would have happened during the shiur. I have to go back and double check the audio, but I'm almost 100% sure that what happened was someone asked, well, you know, in this case, maybe it's not as bad. And I said, that could be. And that became Tershir says that perhaps. So, in reference to your question now, I'm going to be very careful as to what I say. I have to go back and check the audio first, but then I intend to send a letter. Assuming it's what I remember, then I intend to send a letter.
This recording is dangerous.
Yes, it is. It's a recording. That would be the solution. But I do recall seeing someone who said that that because in order to be able to save lives, you need to treat the patients as they come through, and that's going to include a case like this in which you don't have other options and so on. The argument could be made, this is part of your pikuach nefesh, this is part of life-saving, is treating the patients, including the one who is going blind as opposed to the patient who's bleeding out. That would be a potential approach, which I believe I saw in Nishmas Avram, but I'd have to find it first. Okay.
It's interesting, the idea of the vision, because Rav Unterman is speaking about corneal transplants, and that he's trying to make a case there that it's pikuach nefesh. And he actually says for vision of bilateral, like both eyes, he claims it's pikuach nefesh.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he takes that sock is not his own. Is not his own. In fact, that's the way we understand now corneal transplants in terms of pikuach nefesh. But it's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's also interesting that Nishmas Avram doesn't see fit to quote it,
because I think that
he's quite familiar with the view.
Why doesn't he agree with that? It makes sense.
I don't know. I've bothered him twice in the past week for cases, so I don't want to bother him again. But. Well, that's a whole other thing that I'm not going anywhere near right now.
So the Rav says that you're allowed to violate the right only for loss of vision in both eyes.
That is correct.
So is there anybody that says for one?
Say that again.
That you're allowed to violate Torah prohibition
for both eyes. He mentions the view. He doesn't necessarily pask in that way. He mentions the view. Yeah.
But it has to be both eyes.
He's not. I want to say he disagrees. He doesn't openly disagree, but he's a little bit hedgy here.
Now, is there anybody that allows a philosopher in one eye with the view that if you lose one eye, you're one step closer to losing?
Right. So apparently not. Apparently not. In the same way that, not in a halachic realm, but in a general realm, they tell you that donating a kidney is not dangerous because you really only need one kidney. Well, that's true, but a person that is one step closer to having zero kidneys, it's true. You know, it is all of the discussion. But as someone said to me this morning, someone who is an avid supporter of transplant, he said, you have to acknowledge that when a person gets up in years, renal function decreases. And there's no question that at some point they're going to pay the price for having one kidney. You know, it may not be for decades, but it's going to happen. Okay. So take a look now. We've given this category of sakanas eivra, of danger to a limb. We haven't truly defined it. We've sort of defined what it's not a little bit in the realm of vision. But let's see what he does, because there are some key things we have to see. He says, Isure de oraisa al yedei shinui. Okay. Number one, to perform a de oraisa in an unusual way. So he says, Re'e mashakasavti le'el b'si'if 3 Aleph 1, which we already saw. V'kanye shlohakel gam im efshar litroch lazo sayedei nachri. He says, we've already discussed doing a de'oraisa via eshinui in the discussion regarding chol she'in bo sakana. It was on page Shin Pei Tes, right? That was where we had started our whole discussion about the deoraisa with a shinui, and is that the same as doing a derabanan? And then we entered into melacha shin and tzvicha legufa. So he says the same principles are going to apply in terms of the person who has sakonas eiver, who could lose a limb. And he says, v'kan yesh lahagel, here you should be lenient. There's room to be lenient, even if you could get a non-Jew to do it. Doesn't matter, let the Jew do it. Second, v'lach hashen etzvicha legufa. So he says, muva b'shmir Shabbos kehel chasab b'shem, agon Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. He quotes from Rosh Shlomo Zalman, kevan d'lo nizgar lahach mir ela b'chol she'ein bo sakana. Since we only have said that you should be strict in this and not do v'lach hashen etzvicha legufa regarding a patient who is not dangerously ill, the gamba simen shin basi, if you'd be halacha delo with the discussion about laundry, ro'im de'inza kol kach pashut etzlo, you saw there that it wasn't so clear cut for him that malacha shin etzvicha legufa should be off limits in a, you know, across the board way. Lachein nira de'im yesh sakanas eiver. So it appears that if you have a case where someone could lose a limb, ha'olu b'yoredeya simen kufnun zayin matir hashach labor ali surtara. Since in yoredeya the shach permits you to violate a biblical prohibition to save a limb, memela nira da'afshi iser Shabbos chamur yoser. Granted that Shabbos is stricter than the d'oraisa the shach is talking about over there. So Shlomo Zalman said, I'm willing to say on that basis that regarding Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa, which is not now prohibited midi'orei, so it's not biblically prohibited, there's room to be lenient. End of quote from Shlomo Zalman. So it seems like there's room for Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa for a patient in a Sakanas Eiver case. Now, yeah, it's hard for me to come up with offhand a way in which you're going to save someone's life with a malacha shen etzvicha legufa, or save a limb with a malacha shen etzvicha legufa. I can't think of a case. Remember, malacha shen etzvicha legufa is malacha which you do for a purpose that's not the normal purpose for which this malacha is done. So I gave the case last week of putting out the fire that's for the sake of something other than turning it into fuel. You're improving your fuel for a future fire. But I don't know what this would look like in a practical case. Why would that be malach shen etzvicha legufa? Isn't that why I make knots normally, to hold things in place?
Right, but you're not. Could you argue that it's not when you tie down a tent? Your knot is holding down. I'm just wondering if there's an additional step. You just want to essentially create a tension or pressure. Lopped off because you need the knot. It just happens to be that you're going to use a knot as opposed to.
I don't know. I find that hard.
It won't be a permanent knot. If it's not meant for permanent.
Well, that's a separate.
I know. I'm just saying. Maybe that may be.
Yeah, I'm not clear on a practical case for that. But here's the last paragraph, and it's a key. It's key in understanding this and defining what we mean when we say sakonas eiver. V'ayim b'ktzos ha'shulchan. Again, that work from the Grach Noem. D'dino shel ha'shulchan aruch. Hu lav davka b'sakonas eiver mamash. He says, this statement of the Shulchan Aruch is not specifically, literally, danger to a limb. He's going to lose an arm. Meaning the limb will cease to function entirely. Even if there's just a concern that the limb will cease to function the way that other people's limbs do. Kigon, shayitzla al yirecho, such as he will become lame.
I was going to say, so what about somebody who, a sprain or a fracture or something along those lines. Potentially, if this is the standard, that it's not going to function the same as everybody else.
You have room to argue sakonas eiver. Absolutely. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you're dealing with a break, there are other reasons to actually up it to yesh bo sakana in general, depending on the type of break. A break where the two ends don't meet, the Shemir Shabbos Kehelchasa says, if you have a break in which the two ends don't meet, then already we consider that, you know, dangerous to life. If it's in one of the, he talks about long bone fracture specifically. But he's saying here, if there's loss of function, that is already sakana sefer. Now, I don't know exactly how you define loss of function. In other words, it's easy for me to apply this, let's say, and you're going to tell me that this is pikuach nefesh anyway. But I'm imagining a stroke where you have someone who, I'm trying to come up with a case where there's loss of function, but there is danger to life. Well, for how long, though? My understanding is that this is permanent.
You have a fracture that's not dealt with in a way.
Yeah.
That can be dealt with deformity.
Okay. V'kasav li mori harav rav Neuwirth shlita. Rav Yeshua Neuwirth, author of the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, wrote to me. V'yesh makom lomar, shek tzakanas ever, ein zu rak be'ever adam meramach evarim shebo. I've been waiting for this. The problem, in part, is how do you define what an aver is? I keep translating aver as limb, throwing in organ occasionally. There is no English word for aver. It's the equivalent of, if you have scientists who operate within a certain language, and they come up with a technical term for the sake of their work, you won't find an analogous term in another language, because scientists aren't discussing it in that other language. So, taking it out of the realm of science into the realm of Torah, we use the term aver in various ways in Torah to describe something that has no use outside of Torah, and therefore you won't ever find an analogous word outside of Hebrew for it. Aver is used, for example, to say, well, there are 248 avarim in the body of a male, slightly different number in the body of a female. There's no practical purpose. There's nothing that comes of saying this is an aver or this is not an aver. And therefore, in no other language are you going to have an analogous term. And so that when you look at the Mishnayos that try to describe what an aver is, you realize that it doesn't mean bone, it doesn't mean organ, it doesn't mean limb. It's aver. That's what it is. The Mishnah Nalos tells you how you count up 248 avarim. It doesn't fit any sort of system that you're going to be able to work with. So he says here, this is what Rav Neuwirth says, when we're talking about danger to an aver, it doesn't mean one of the 248. That's not our use of the word. Ella, rather, third line in the left-hand column, kol chilek misuyam shel guf ha'adam, any independent section, demarcated section in the person's body, Asherim lo yitaplu bo ka'es, which, if they weren't to treat it now, yesh chashash sheyetze mipu'ulazo, there's concern that it will become dysfunctional. Gam ze nikra b'shem sakanas aver. That's called danger to an aver. Kigon, for example. Rechem ha'isha asher mitafkida laledes yiladim. Em lo yitaplu bo karaoi ayidei lekichas trufos kayam chashash shlo tuchal likanes leherayon. Let's say there was a woman whose uterus was for some reason experiencing some problem which, left untreated, that condition would cause her to be incapable of bearing children. But there's a medicine that they can give her and that will make her capable of bearing children. Gam ze nikra b'shem ha'sakanas aver. So that's called danger to an aver of the body. So the word aver he hasn't made it so much more clear. Saying makom misuyam, chelek misuyam shel haguf, still hasn't told me what that means. It means it's a
body part, no?
Right, but what does that mean?
An organ or an organ system?
I mean, I understand, yes. When you get internal, it doesn't matter. Because when you get internal, you're playing with more serious issues. No one's going to claim that damage to the liver isn't sakanas aver. They're going to say sakanas nefashos. So we don't need to go to the internal organ. But does he mean a fingernail? My fingernail won't function normally. Is that a chelek misuyam shebaguf? I don't think so. But I can't prove that. But who said anything about debilitate? All we said is that there's a part of the body that has a function, now it's not going to function.
You don't need your fingernail.
But who said anything about need? He didn't say anything about level of need, how important the aver is. To me, it is very unclear. I don't know from this that I could...
What function does your fingernail play to the rest of your body?
That's what you do. If you're a pitcher, or if you're a mole, you might need a fingernail.
Let's say you're talking about, sort of one of the questions that he begged with the eye discussion is when you have more than one of something, do I view left eye and right eye together as eyes, or do I say each eye really is an aver in its own right? My gut assumption would have been that they're separate. The same way that each finger is separate. You don't say to someone who's in danger of losing a finger from a fracture, well, that's okay, you have nine others, right? That's called second as aver. So why should I say the same thing regarding eyes?
Well, with the eyes, it's even more...
Depth perception.
Well,
loss of one eye damages both.
Yeah, so then definitely it can't function the way it's...
Right. So based on what he's saying at the end here from the Ketzos HaShulchan and from Rav Neuwirth, I see a much broader definition of Sakhanas Eber. I see this as being much broader than I would have assumed after his discussion about the eyes. So, God willing, we are licensed to continue this on the 22nd, and I think we have this room.